Power Records presents...
Hello, and welcome to the premiere episode of the Power Records Podcast, part of the Fire and Water family of podcasts. I am one of your hosts, Rob Kelly from the Aquaman Shrine, and with me is my special guest host, Chris Franklin, a.k.a. Earth2 Chris. Chris, good evening, and thank you for joining me on the show.
Hey, Rob, how you doing? It's great to be here.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you back. You were one of our most requested guest hosts after you stepped in on the Power Records, I forget which episode you did, of the Fire and Water podcast show, but... Everyone wanted you back, and so we're going to have you back for this premiere episode of the Power Records podcast. It's finally getting its own show. Shag and I have been talking about it. As we all know, we all have, you know, the Who's Who has its own show, and the RPG thing has its own show, and we wanted to give Power Records its own show. So now it does. It's going to be part of the Fire and Water feed. It'll have its own theme song, as you heard, and so we're going to be, you know, just exclusively talking about Power Records on this show. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds great.
All of you that are hearing this, it's post-Halloween, but we are going to be covering some Halloween-related stuff. I know we're kind of out of date, but I figured that, like, The Simpsons in its heyday used to do the Treehouse of Horror episodes after Halloween.
Right.
So if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for us. So we were going to be covering some creepy Power Records stuff for this episode. But first, we want to talk a little about in-stock trades. This episode of the Power Records podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all up for up to 45% off with free shipping of orders for $50 or more. One of the deals you can find on InStockTrades.com right now, and related to this episode for me, is Essential Man Thing Volume, which I agree, Man Things are essential, yes. Essential Man Thing Volume 1. Collects Savage Tales number 1, Astonishing Tales 12 to 13, Adventure into Fear 10 to 19, Man Thing 1 to 14, Giant Size Man Thing 1 to 2, and Monsters Unleashed 5, 8, and 9. Pretty amazing stuff. 544 pages, cover by Frank Brunner, featuring work by Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway, Len Wein, Steve Gerber, Mike Plug, Tony Isabella, Gray Morrow, John Buscema, Neil Adams, Rich Buckler, Howard Chaykin, Jim Starlin, Val Merrick, Mike Plug, Klaus Janson, Tom Sutton, Alfredo Alcala, and Vicente Alcazar. You cannot beat that. It's currently on sale for $9.34, regular price $16.99. That is 45% off. So for $10, you're getting 544 pages of the muck-encrusted monster. You can't beat it. It's a lot of fun. Chris, what do you have for us?
Before I go there, I just got to say, you have to, if you mention Man-Thing in a podcast, I think you have to mention giant-sized Man-Thing.
I did. I kind of ran over it when they talked about
it. So you did it.
Giant-sized Man-Thing. That is one of the most famous Marvel comics ever published. So I'm glad to see it's included in the book.
That is like the 70s comic experience right there. The names you mentioned is just, that's incredible that many different creators of note worked on that book, and it's Man Thing, you know, that's crazy, but that's
yep.
awesome.
Yep.
I mean, that can't beat that. I actually picked in the Marvel horror genre, the Tomb of Dracula trade paperback volume 1, and I think the Tomb of Dracula is usually considered the crown jewel of Marvel's horror series, so you can't go wrong there. It's most famously written by Marv Wolfman, and with art by Gene Colan and Tom Palmer, and Colan's there from the start, but of course, like any 70s book, it started by Jerry Conway. So it's a law, you know. So InStock Trades has it for $13.74. It's normally $24.99. That is 45% off, and I mean, you can't go wrong. You know, besides Wolfman and Conway, you got Archie Goodwin, you've got Gardner Fox. I mean, you can't go wrong, and it's just such a great series.
That's fun stuff. Absolutely. And I would agree with you. That is like Marvel's premier monster book. Absolutely. That's a fantastic deal, and you can get all these other deals. For all these and all their in-stock trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. Thanks, guys. Anyway, as I mentioned, we are going to cover in this premiere episode of the Power Records podcast a couple of the horror sort of records that Power Records or Peter Pan Records, however you want to classify them, did. The first one we're going to lead off with is one of kind of like, I guess I would say the lesser famous ones, because it's not based off a pre-existing DC or Marvel comic. The record is called A Story of Dracula, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein. And despite that ungainly title, it is a really, really effective little story featuring the three most famous horror monsters. We will talk about it a whole bunch once you listen to it, but we want to get to it right now because it is a ton of fun. It's 23 minutes, so it's like its own little mini movie. So sit back and enjoy this really effective story featuring the three great horror monsters.
The year is 1883. The hour is late, and the moon is full. As two exhausted human beings crash through the underbrush and into a clearing, there is no cause for death like that. And pain.
Vincent, they're gaining on us. See, they come. Vincent, we lost.
No, Eric. Not if we can reach those trees yonder. Hurry, darling. Just a few paces more. Hurry! That's it, darling. Climb up as high as you can.
I have a handhold, Vincent. Now, you come up.
Hold!
And like a blanket, calm and falls the once enraged dogs, and they trot off, docile and tame as household pets, to the feet of their master.
Please, gentlefolk, do not be afraid. The dogs will do you no harm. I am to blame entirely for this terrible incident. It was senseless of me to continue hunting after the sun had gone down. Forgive me. And please allow me to make this up to you in some way.
The stranger's voice is openly friendly, but not till Erica is safely on the ground does the man Vincent reply.
You are a gentleman, sir. But you may wish you had not so quickly called off your dogs when you learn who I am.
Then please tell me. I can stand the suspense no longer.
My name is Vincent. I am the nephew, the very proud nephew of Baron von Frankenstein. This is my fiancée, Erica.
In that case, you are the new Baron von Frankenstein, now that your uncle is dead, which entitles you to the simple hospitality of my home for as long as you may desire it. Please accompany me. You must.
If you insist. You are very kind, and we are exhausted.
And his fiancée safely mounted the horse of their new friend. The tension of the previous few days falls away.
Frankenstein, and yours, for as long as you would like to stay.
You are too kind, sir. I fear you may not know of the events surrounding my uncle's death. I feel honor-bound to tell you of them before we cross the threshold of your home.
I know the events, Baron. His experiments, the monster he created, the destruction the monster caused, and finally the enraged villagers who caused the death of your uncle. But you are merely his nephew.
Aye, merely, but a Frankenstein, nevertheless, and tainted. The villagers were not satisfied to murder my uncle. They came to my home at the dinner hour. They howled in rage as they burned my home to the ground, and in greater rage as Erica and I escaped in the confusion. We have been pursued, pounded from that moment.
Ah, here we are, my home, Hilda.
It's beautiful.
I'm glad you are pleased, mademoiselle. This ordeal must have been terrifying for you. You must think a great deal of our young baron.
I love him, sir. And if needs be, I will die beside him. If we can just keep them from finding our... Oh, Vincent.
What Erica is most worried about is that if it is discovered that I actually assisted my uncle at times and know all the secrets which supposedly died with him, our pursuers will double in number and surely destroy us.
Please, Baron. Enough of this depressing talk. You shall both bathe. And after a comfortable dinner, we shall sip wine before my great fireplace, and all this will seem as though it happened in another world.
Soon the new Baron Frankenstein calmly bathed.
hands and pulls on his pants and runs from the room.
Erica! Erica, where are you? Erica!
You need go no further, Baron. What you seek is through this door.
Erica, is she in there? I thought I heard her scream. Was it Erica?
His newfound friend stands in mute silence. Finally, Vincent brushes roughly past him and into the indicated room.
What is this? It seems...
Like a blast of cold air, the full impact of the room strikes Vincent Frankenstein. The room, except for minor differences, is the duplicate of his uncle's laboratory. The room in which his uncle created what became known as Frankenstein's monster.
Explain this. No. First tell me where Erica is.
Calm down, my good Baron. This laboratory represents my failure at the same experiment your uncle succeeded at. The same experiments you will succeed at if you ever expect to see your beloved again alive.
In a blind rage, Vincent rushes past his betrayer.
Look for her if you will, fool! This castle has hundreds of rooms, dozens of tunnels, and miles of labyrinthian dungeons and torture chambers. She would starve before you could find her. That is, if I put her in an obvious place, and not behind some secret panel somewhere. No, Baron Frankenstein, you will not search for your missing Erica! You will build me a man, a slave to my will, and will start now, or your beloved Erica will never see the light of a new day.
All right. I'll do it.
To escape the torture of not knowing, Vincent finds himself in the sleeping room, creating a living man from dead bodies, which is now hidden in his supplies in abundance.
No more bodies. I have all the parts I need. Where do you get all these bodies? And in such good condition? In heaven's name, man.
I merely want you to be happy. I wouldn't supply you with inferior material. Am I correct in assuming that we are at the final stage?
You are correct. But we will never complete that final stage until and unless I see Erica safe and unharmed. If I don't, I'll...
Baron, please, please don't get overly dramatic. Mind your dials and gadgets like a good boy. And if you look to my left, you'll see your fiancé, safe.
Oh, Vincent!
Enough! My, assistants will guard your Erica as you work, Baron. Do not make any false moves, or they will kill her. Make no mistake about that. I am too resolved to be stopped by false heroics. Move!
With practiced fingers, young Baron Frankenstein manipulates his panel and finally throws the switch that controls the raw electricity.
Is he alive? Did it work? He's not moving, not breathing.
Give it some time. It could be hours before we know.
An eyelid flutters open as the two men talk.
Good Lord. He's alive and enraged.
His brain inflamed. The patchwork creature stumbles forward as his creator cries to restrain him.
Stop! Sit down! Stop!
Stop him, guards! Stop him, or it will mean your deaths! Subdue him, Cretans, before he reaches the door!
And now he pauses. No one bars his path but the frail and beautiful Erica. Slowly, he raises his eyes to hers and again moves forward.
No! Stay away from her!
Who can know the thoughts this monster has as he approaches? And now lifts the girl from the cold stone and over his head.
No!
Who can say if he thinks at all as he steps between the ledge and hurls the girl to her death? He walks away from this now silent room, leaving a man whose mind reels and heart rattles in his chest.
Erica! Erica! She's dead. No, she's moving, I think. Oh, help her, help her. She's alive, but broken. She looks so helpless. Count, this is your doing. Help her, please. I'll do anything to repay you. Please, I beg of you.
Without a word, the evil host steps up to the window, raises his face to the moon, and parts his lips. first. An answering growl drifts upward. Then a shadow breaks free from the darkness of the forest and drops quickly to the side of the moaning Erica. As it becomes more distinct to Vincent's unbelieving eyes, his worst dreams become reality. As the form of the implies a
it's attacking her. And she's helpless. No! No! Good luck!
In his hysterical state, Vincent hardly feels the hand which stands behind his neck clenches. There is a brief shock as he slips nerveless to the floor, and blackness enfolds him. Back on the ground, Erica has survived the attack of the werewolf, and though unconscious, her breathing is regular.
There she is.
She seems so still.
Don't worry, she's alive. Talk, Bela. Gather her up and bring her along.
Yes, Grandmother. All right. We've got her.
She's very beautiful, Grandmother.
Yes. Now.
Hours later, Erica slowly regains consciousness.
Come, child, wake up. You have slept long enough. There is much to do. Wake up.
Oh, where am I? How did I get here? Oh, I've had such nightmares. What is happening to me?
You are in a gypsy camp, and I am Maliva, queen of the gypsies. And you are here to serve and make your place till the end of your days.
What? What are you saying? Oh, Vincent. Vincent, where are you? I need you. This is insane. Please, tell me, this is all a dream.
Girl, silence. This is no dream, nor will it end. You will stay here and you will work, or you will be beaten till you beg for mercy. Now go and begin your chores, or so help me, the beatings will begin right now.
Move along.
Discipline of Bela, Maliva's grandson, as Maliva herself watches with a pale.
That's it. That's it. Make her work for her keep.
Finally, as the sun goes down, Erica is allowed to rest, tamed. Weariness brings its own security, and as she begins to doze off on the ground behind one of the wagons, she fails to hear the clumsy footfalls and then...
What? Who is it? Who is that?
Please, Missy, please, it's me, Torque. I would not harm you. You are like a flower. I have brought some broth. I will leave if you wish me to. I just thought...
Oh, no, Torque. Don't leave. You're right. I do need some food. Thank you.
Your hand. The pentagram!
Dropping the broth, Torque spins and rushes away from the helpless female, naked fear etched upon his face.
Torque, what is it? Why do you run?
The pentagram! The pentagram! And the moon is full tonight!
Erica looks at her hand, and the symbol of the pentagram which now appears there. The mind drifts back to a poem she once heard. Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by name, he become a wolf when the wolf mane blooms and the moon is shining bright. Some say Bela is insane, and the menacing whip he carries adds to this theory. Be a chained and helpless prisoner. Why does he wait till the night to accomplish his loathsome ends? As he steps into the shadows, he hears a sound which tells him that never again need these questions be asked. The sound of the werewolf.
No! No, stay away!
Bela turns to run. His intended victim strikes him down.
Werewolf! Werewolf! There it is! Everyone!
everyone's attention. It's...
It's no use. We'll never capture him.
Stop whining, you fool. You've lost your love, but not yet your life. The monster's had a full day to calm down. Help me restrain him, or you will spend yet another day in my dungeon, Baron Frankenstein.
Slave to protect my sleep so that I might wake at night and proud for the blood that sustains me. The blood of innocent victims to quench my undying thirst.
As though waking from a long sleep, the monster's lip curls and he reaches out to grasp the throat of Dracula. Lifting the vampire into the air, he effortlessly dashes into the ground. Horror stretches the eyes of Vincent Frankenstein as the vampire, unhurt, rises, revealing an evil grin, and attacks the man-made monster and claws for its throat. This man-made was born of the elements. His superhuman hands climb once again on the throat of Dracula. Silently, each squeeze the throat of the entire universe past the big muscle seeking room to
He's swimming!
Himself and flies upward and toward Vincent, intent on escape. The face of Erica flashes through Vincent's mind. Grim determination sets his jaw as he reaches for an urn of burning embers and hurls it full in the face of Dracula. Screaming in pain, he flies up, circles, then dives straight into the monster. Tumbling into the lab, the two fingers smash into chemicals at the cliff.
alive. Maybe it will be just as well. Without Erica, I might as well be dead. No, I can't lose hope. She might still be alive.
But as Vincent turns to...
werewolf blocking my path. It's confused by the fire. It'll doom us both if it doesn't move. No! I must try to reason with it. Wolf, listen to me. That fire will kill us. We must go. I can show you the way. We'll die if we stay here. Don't you understand? It's stepping aside, letting me pass. It does understand. It must hurry before those chemicals explode. Hurry, Wolf, hurry. The flames are spreading. We only have seconds. We made it. No, don't stop. The whole place is about to collapse. And now, Wolf, what of the two of us? Will you try to devour... What? Something's happening. You're changing, transforming, becoming familiar. Oh, Lord. Erica! Erica, my darling! How can this be? No. No, 'tis enough. You are here. Here, put on my cloak.
Oh, Vincent, it was horrible. Horrible. I can hardly bring myself to think of it.
Don't think about it for a while. Just think that we are safe and alive and that the sun is rising on a new day. Our day.
But my, this thing that will...
You mean your werewolfism? My love, do not fear it. I know a man, a doctor, who has cured this condition. We shall find him. And we shall defeat this thing together. We have come through a night of unending terror, and it has come to an end.
How about that, guys? Is that not a lot of fun? I mean, that is a—I mean, that is like a little mini Hammer horror movie all by itself, just done by the Power Records folks. Like I said, at 23 minutes, it is it's like its own little movie.
I think some of the Universal movies might have actually been a little bit shorter.
I think the Brute Man is a little bit shorter than this. This was a load of fun. It came originally, in terms of a Power Records form, it came as a an LP with it was a book and record set, and the art is by Neil Adams. So you've got, it's something like, I don't know, like about 20 pages or 21 pages, and it's all Neil Adams artwork drawing these three monsters. It's really an amazing book. I found it on eBay many years ago for like $10, and I couldn't believe this thing wasn't more valuable than that. I mean, this thing is just truly amazing. So we're going to post some pictures from it on our Tumblr, which is, of course, fireandwaterpodcast.tumblr.com, so you can see what we're talking about. But it is, 70s Neil Adams is Neil Adams at the top of his game. Him drawing monsters. I mean, they really barely edit this for sort of children's consumption. It's fairly violent. It's pretty intense. I mean, and of course, when you have Neil Adams drawing it, it's just that much more. Everybody's so extreme. Everybody's so angry. So it's pretty astonishing that this was marketed to children,
Yeah, I think, Frankenstein picks the Erica up and throws her out the window. I mean, the monster, throws her out the window. And I mean, then she's, not only is she probably just crippled, but now she's going to get eaten by a wolf. I mean,
that it's funny you mentioned that part, because that reminds me a bit. I assume you've seen Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yes.
Okay. There's a stunt in that movie where Frankenstein picks up the evil female scientist.
Yes.
And hurls her out the window.
Yeah, for like no real reason other than he's just kind of stumbling around and picks her up and throws her out the window.
It's all one unbroken shot. And you see a live actress. I mean, clearly it's the stunt woman. But you see a live actress go through a plate glass window. And for an Abbott Costello movie, you're like, holy crap. Like, that's a pretty amazing effect. I mean, it's pretty startling. And so it's funny that you said that because that's exactly what it reminded me of. It's like, it's pretty damn intense.
I was thinking the same thing because, you know, it's just that part is, I mean, with so many hijinks going on in that movie, and it's just like, it is. It just kind of stands out in your mind. It's just like being pretty extreme, you know?
It's, I mean, if you saw that in any movie nowadays, it would be pretty startling, let alone a 1948 Abbott and Costello movie, of all things. In terms of the origins of where this came from, I have never quite been able to figure out where this thing first originated because I keep hearing different versions. One person on my long-defunct blog, powerrecord.blogspot.com, when I posted this, one person commented and said that this was produced originally. Neil Adams was commissioned by – let me find it here. Oh, Hector, I think it's Hector Negrete even who wrote this. Let me see. It says, in fact, this TPB story was initiated by Fershid Baruka, French editor, who asked Neil to publish an album version of this cool LP insert. It was readapted completely and made for standard format, first publication in France as Plain Moon. Before hitting the U.S. a second time around in House of Hammer. Now, I do remember it being in House of Hammer because I have that issue of that magazine. And so they did run it in House of Hammer in black and white. So I guess is what I can sense is that it was done, commissioned by Neil, you know, by someone overseas, asked Neil to do it, and then they converted it into this record. And I guess that means they then made it into it was done as a comic book first. Then they turned it into an audio adventure, I'm guessing.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
So probably because Neil Adams obviously had a relationship with Power Records, it maybe kind of organically grew from that, you know?
Right. I mean, it's clearly not written. I think if you look at it, how wordy it is, you can pretty much tell it was not done originally as a Power Record. Because, like, if you look at the Spider-Man Mark of the Man-Wolf story, a lot of that dialogue from the original comic book has been taken out and replaced by shorter sentences.
Yeah.
Because obviously they had, you know, couldn't get so wordy. This is an incredibly wordy story. I mean, if you look at the artwork, I mean, the balloons are just loaded down with dialogue. So clearly it wasn't, you know, it wasn't written to be a Power Record because it would have been a lot shorter. You would have had a lot less people talking. And then later, Adams repurposed it in the 2003 paperback from Vanguard Productions titled Neil Adams Monsters, which features an expanded 46-page version of the same story.
Oh.
With an altered layout, and I believe it was probably recolored, as most of the Neil Adams stuff is, unfortunately.
Did he redraw any of it?
God, I hope not. Yeah, George Lucas disease. But anyway, so yeah, this thing has appeared in several different forms. But, I mean, to me, this is the most effective. It is really an incredibly powerful story. Now, I didn't have this as a kid. If I did, I don't remember, but I can't believe I wouldn't remember. I don't think I ever had it as a kid. I know I had the Marvel ones, but this one just must have eluded my grasp. Did you ever have this? Did you have this growing up, Chris?
I avoided monster stuff like the plague, and it kind of ties back to, oddly enough, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. My grandfather was a big Abbott and Costello fan, and that movie was going to be played on TV when I was like about 4 years old. And his TV was in the shop. That tells you how long ago this was when you your TV was in the shop rather than just going to buy a new TV, right? So he came over to our house to watch it. And we started watching it, you know, but in the very first few minutes of that movie, Lon Chaney turns into the Wolfman. And he started changing, and I flipped out. I mean, I just lost my crap. I mean, I just went nuts. And they had to turn it off, and I was traumatized. I was scared to death of anything to do with the monsters after that for years. But, as time went on and I kept getting exposed, I'd see the Rimco toys on the shelf, and you know, you'd see stuff at Halloween. I liked them from afar, but I was still scared of them. So eventually somebody finally brought that movie to school when I was like in third grade or something. And I sat through it and I'm like, Why was I so tore up about this? But so after that, I was kind of, you know, I was okay. But you know, when I was little, real young, I just anything. I had the Marvel Treasury book that had the Spider-Man team ups with I think like Ghost Rider and maybe like reprinted Marvel team ups.
Yeah,
stuff.
Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, Werewolf by Night,
Ghost Rider, the X-Men.
Yeah,
I'm blanking on the fourth one, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I, you know, it had Spider-Man, so I, you know, I asked my mom to buy it for me, and I got it home, and it was, I guess, the tabloids kind of weirded me out because they were so big, the treasuries, and the combination of the large size and the monsters, I think she bought it for me and then had to throw it away. I was such a wiener. Such a wiener back then. I just couldn't.
$1.50 down the drain.
Yeah, that's $1.50 back in 1979. You know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, oh yeah.
So no, I didn't own that. This, you know, later years, I became a big fan of the Universal Monsters and the Hammer, and so this is, I think this is great. You know, it is so much like it would have been such a great Hammer movie. You know, it's plots a lot better than some of the later Dracula movies, you know, and when they kind of, you know, Christopher Lee would show up for 2 minutes in the movie and just kind of glare, and, you know, so the one thing I do want to point out that kind of hit me was it says it's the story of Dracula, Frankenstein, and the Wolfman, or the Wolf, Dracula, Wolfman, and Frankenstein, but there's no Wolfman in the story.
Right, that's right.
They're both female.
Right, in the story, it's called Werewolf, the Werewolf. He's not called the Wolfman, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, somebody decided to, I guess, thought Wolfman was a better marketing tool.
Yeah.
Speaking of Wolfman, it was Universal must have been asleep at the wheel because their lawyers didn't notice the use of the famous poem from the movie and Maliva and
right,
Bela,
right.
Which are all Universal characters.
Yep.
that they created, Kurt Siodmak created for them. So I would say that you know, nowadays they probably couldn't get away with something like this without having Universal.
Yeah, that little poem about the Wolfbane, that's a Universal creation. That's not out of like folklore. That was written for the movie.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the artwork, and again, we'll post this on the Tumblr, but like just having Neil Adams draw any woman of a sort of like quote unquote, you know, sexual prime is way too sexy for children to look at, you know.
Yeah.
even if she's covered up, just the way he drew women, there's a page here, and again, I'll post it, where she turns into the werewolf, where she is chained up, and she's in like a nightgown. And just the position that she in, she's like, that's an, you know, like, there's no way a child should be seeing that.
It just, she's in a very prone position.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Neil Adams was incapable of drawing unattractive women, you know. So
no.
it's like Frank Thorne drawing Red Sonja. Just by the sheer fact of his style, it looks like it's adult. So
yeah, it's like it's almost not admissible by the comic code authority, you know.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. So again, this is you know, one of the things I loved about the Power Records is that they somehow slipped a lot of this stuff sort of under the radar for kids, you know, stuff that probably would not pass muster nowadays, and that's part of the entertainment of it. And in terms of repurposing, I always get on my hobby horse about how much Power Records love to repurpose stuff because they re-ran the same records, same audio adventures over multiple formats, multiple records. They did repurpose these as 3:45 singles. Now, I've never heard those edited versions, so I'm not sure how they did it, but Wolfman, Dracula, and Frankenstein did get all their own 45 records, and presumably it was the chunks of their story from this story cut up into the individual thing. I've never heard those, but I've only seen the artwork. And what's weird is the sleeves, the 45 sleeves for the individual monster records are like drawn by somebody in-house at Power Records, and they're horrible. Like, I don't know why they just couldn't recrib the Neil Adams drawings. It makes no sense to me. They look terrible. They look absolutely terrible. You would have no idea that the record itself is so cool. So, so this thing is a real blast. And like I said, you can pick it up on eBay for next to nothing, and it is just a ton of fun, as of course you just heard. So it really is like it's its own little mini movie, and it's one of my all-time favorite things that they did, you know, despite the fact that I didn't grow up on it. That's usually the thing. The reason I love it is because I loved it as a kid. But this is one of those ones. I heard it as an adult, and I'm like, oh boy, this is this is probably the best they ever were at this point in terms of their creativity.
You know, that's kind of a funny thing with Power Rangers, really. I mean, as an adult, you know, even listening to ones I didn't have as a kid or listening to ones I did, I actually enjoy them. It's not like, you know, as much as I love the Super Friends, sometimes it's hard to sit through one, you know?
Yeah, yes.
The nostalgia carries you through. But with these, they're actually good.
Yeah.
Like, they actually stand up, you know, to the test of time. They're entertaining, you know, and I think they had those guys, those unfortunately mostly unknown people that did it. They were good. They did good work, you know, and it really, you know, you could hold that up to some of the better horror movies of the day, and definitely better than, you know, American International's, you know, Dracula versus Frankenstein with the Dracula with the perm and Frankenstein with the shoebox on his head.
Oh, God, don't even remind me of that movie. that movie makes me sad. That movie just makes me so sad. The drunken
Lon Chaney
stumbling around. Yeah, oh, Lord. Yeah, you're right. It is. This is better than, you know, most of the horror movies they were made in the 70s featuring these same characters. So, it's a ton of fun. And, you know, you hit on something about how most of the creative people behind these records are unknown. You know, somebody out there hearing this, please hire me to write a book on the Power Records. I'll do it. I'll do all the research necessary, but I need to get money to do it because I can't devote my whole life to this. But I would love to write a book on the Power Records, a total history. So somebody hire me, some millionaire out there that listens to the show. Please, you know, you can just send me an email at firewaterpodcast@comcast.net, for the love of God.
And I would love to read it, so somebody hire him, please.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, the other record we were going to tackle on this show is one that I am familiar with from being a kid, because I definitely had this one. It is one of Marvel's, one of their Marvel adaptations. It is The Man-Thing. Of course, we were talking about Man-Thing earlier. The story is Night of the Laughing Dead. It is an adaptation of Man-Thing number 5, written by Steve Gerber, or by Mike Ploog and Frank Chiaramonte. Nothing really can prepare you for what you're about to hear, so I'm not going to keep talking. Just listen and enjoy, and we'll catch you on the other side if you all are still here with us. Thank you.
Power Records presents Man-Thing in Night of the Laughing Dead. Swamp, a bubbling bed of life of which you are a part. Once you were a man, a chemist named Ted Salas, but the syrup that was to have made you a super soldier combined with strange forces in the swamp to make you over into the Man-Thing. But your former existence seems a far-off dream to you, doesn't it? Less than a dream, in fact. No longer able to reason, you now function on emotion, those few which you still feel. You can feel what others feel. You can understand those feelings. But emotions are often as ambiguous as words, and sometimes they are even more so. Consider this weeping clown, for example. What does he feel now as he raises a gun to his temple, as the tears roll down his grease-painted cheeks? You may never know, for across the marshland comes a single, devastatingly final shot. That prods you into action. You attempt to hurry to the source of the evil sound. But no matter, you are too late. It was too late before you began. And all you can do is stare through hazy, crimson eyes at the little clown's corpse and reflect on the buried fragments of memories brought to the surface by the ugly sight. You remember how the man you were fought to protect his scientific discovery. You remember more, the blinding moments of escape, the knowledge that he had to destroy the vial, and perhaps, at the same time, destroy himself. And so, Ted Salas did what had to be done. Memory. You recall the transformation, the mingling of the chemical with the swamp waters around him, the stark shock to his metabolism, and the bitter ending of his sanity. Slowly, mercifully, the memories end. And the man who was once Ted Salas, whose body has become that of a swamp-roaming creature, forgets again what once he knew. It's better that way. It's better. As those thoughts fade, your gaze falls upon something at the dead man's foot. But you wonder, could these little scrawls on this thin white leaf explain why the man took his own life? But wait, another flash of recollection from your former life. Funeral. Humans bury their dead. so this one must be laid to rest. And so you take the body deep into the marsh, while events take shape miles away that will transform this already somber evening into something more terrifying by far.
The only rooms left are my deluxe.
Come on, Richard, we'll find another...
Lady, not tonight. I'm exhausted.
I'll just bet. That'll be $22.40, including tax.
These two young people are Richard Rory and Ruth Hart, two old friends of yours, Man-Thing.
Well, that was a hassle, wasn't it?
I'll say. I'll bet he's a reform school reject. But, you know, I haven't got the energy to argue with him. Not now.
Maybe we can go to the carnival tomorrow.
Carnival?
Sure. See the trucks over there? They must be playing a town around here.
Boss, Mr. Garvey, Daryl's gone. Run away. We've got to go after him. We can't lose the show's only clown. And besides, he was terribly upset tonight. I'm afraid of what he might do. Please, Mr. Garvey, if he does something rash, you'll be out.
I'll be the boss of this three-ring loony farm, just like before, you hear? And if you don't like it, you can scram.
Holy cow, Ruth. Did you see that?
Richard, wait. You don't know...
Them's your options, Ayla. Either you...
Huh? Hold it right there, Buster.
Oh, run along, sonny.
You heard the man, Twipe. Scram. See? He's the boss. He's my boss. And I don't like nobody messing with my boss.
Oh, boy.
No, sir, I don't like it at all. Now, I'd advise you to blow while you still got legs to walk on. It ain't wise to get Trag mad at you twice.
Trag? The world's strongest man? Gosh, that's who hit me.
Whoever you are, you've got to get out of here.
She's right, Richard. Please, take me with you.
Hey, boss, Ayla's leaving, too.
Step on it, lover. Trag doesn't look happy about this. In fact, I think he and DeBoss plan to follow us.
I don't care about them. I just want to find Daryl. My poor clown.
First, we find another motel. I've got to get to sleep. We can go Clarabelle hunting tomorrow, Miss... You haven't told us your name, Miss, or why you're looking for a clown.
I'm sorry, it's Ayla Prentice. I'm a high-wire artist with the carnival, and I'm trying to keep my clown from destroying himself. You see, I loved Daryl, but I betrayed him. He stopped laughing, stopped living, just wanted to die.
Stop! Pull over there! That's his car!
Sure, okay.
There he is, and thank the Lord he's alive! Daryl! I'm here! Daryl! Daryl, what's wrong? Can't you see me? It's Ayla! Why doesn't he answer? He acts as if he doesn't know who I am.
Maybe his mind is just totally snapped.
That's so. It's my fault.
Whoa! Where do you think you're going? It's dangerous out there.
Let go of me! I have to go after him! It's my fault! He's like this!
Richard, look at this. I think it's a suicide note.
Ayla's not exaggerating. The little guy is in a bad way.
To say the least.
Okay, then. We go. But slowly, carefully. Remember, the next log you step on could have teeth.
But as the three young people forge cautiously into the tepid waters of your home, two somewhat more sinister figures race along the swampside highway in pursuit.
Sure, I'm sure they took this road. I think.
You think? Ha! You don't know how, Trag.
Oh, boss, I try. Hey, boss, look at up the road there. It's the clown. Dancing in some kind of spotlight. Only, where's the light coming from? He don't even look real. Boss, I'm scared.
Slow down, you fool. You'll hit him. We don't want to kill him outright. Swerve, you idiot, swerve.
I'm swerving, but we're going to hit that tree.
The truck's gas tank explodes on impact, and the vehicle becomes a Nova Bright Inferno. And the little clown stands watching, gleefully.
Good evening, Trag. How are you? I am fine. Where is Garvey?
Why, you little punk. When I get out from under this...
You'll kill me. Make me die. Where's Garvey?
You blasted right, I'll kill you. I'm mad now.
Oh, my. He's mad. But he'll still have to catch me. And he can. Because he's too big and slow and stupid.
Maybe. But at least I ain't no walking joke.
not too far away.
Listen, voices. It sounded like traffic.
Didn't hear anything. Are you sure?
No. It's hard to be sure of anything in here. I didn't realize it would be this dark. There were so many little sounds, so many shadows. Oh! That's no shadow. It's some kind of... Here. Oh, whoa.
I know this is hard to believe, but that creature won't harm us or Derek. If that is the clown he's holding, he may be protecting us.
Even so, we better not stop him.
Right. We'll move closer, slowly.
And so, not suspecting that the man they seek to save is already dead, they inch their way through the dense swamp growth toward the spot where you stand. Hunt of earth you've chosen for the man's final resting place. And when they push aside the last clump of green, when they see the clown's limp body and the heavy branch in your mottled hand, Aeon draws the logical but wrong conclusion and panics. Heedless of the seeming danger you present, she rushes to the side of her fallen friend.
Daryl, wake up! It's Aeon! Daryl! Oh, no! He's dead! Dead!
You can feel this woman's deep sorrow. Your own head bows. But then, another powerful emotional force makes you whirl, startled.
How could you? I'd almost come to think of you as human. But now, get out! Get out of here, or else...
Anger aimed directly at you, emanating from the man you assume to be your friend. Why? What did you do? Why does he loathe you so? You cannot reason. And even if you could, you lack the vocal mechanism with which you might explain to them their error. So you merely skulk away. Once you have gone, tears flow copiously.
I didn't believe the man thing was capable of this. In fact, it still strikes me as odd that I could face him down so easily. Unless...
I never told him how I felt. I'm so ashamed.
Oh, wow! How could I have been so blind?
Aeon, look. He's been shot. The monster didn't kill him.
But that's impossible. We didn't hear any gun go off. And we just saw Daryl alive a few minutes ago. Didn't we?
You know, I'm beginning to wonder about that.
So am I. We all saw something back there. But what?
A ghost, maybe?
Come on, Ruth. Under the circumstances, isn't that a little bit morbid?
Nice try, Twerp. Play acting that clown's dead to protect them from me.
Trag!
Come on, clownsy. Stand up and get beat to death like a man, you hear?
Stop it, Trag! You can't kill a corpse. Trag, I said stop it!
You said... Why should the world's strongest man care what you said?
Perhaps you are the reason Trag should care. For despite your puzzlement at his earlier outburst, you still know Rory as a good man.
Who's the luck in the gorilla suit?
And Trag's assault upon him enrages you.
Whoever he is, he ain't on my side. So he must be on yours. So? He's a blasted living slime. That's gonna stop me. This is a challenge for me. I know I can take any man. What a monster. That's something new. I sliced right through him.
He has torn from you some small bits of your being, yet still you stand, to all appearances, unharmed.
I tore into you, ripped you apart, and you didn't even feel it.
You are waiting for one reaction, fear. For if this man, or any man, fears you, your very touch can burn his flesh to ashes. But Trag is not afraid, only amazed. He attacks again. But this time, it is your strength which prevails. And in the absence of fear, you resort to other, even more brutal, means to destroy your foe. But the memories return once more, the visions of needless, wanton slaughter. And though your instincts advise you otherwise, you allow him to live. And as you make that choice, the most bizarre event of this night occurs.
Holy leaping! What is it? What's happening to him? Or is it happening to us? Are we all losing our minds?
The warm night air has suddenly turned chill. As you stare along with the humans at the skeletal specter that has risen from Daryl's lifeless shell.
What are you?
you. What do you want?
Why, I want to make you laugh. I want smiles and guffaws and grins and good cheer. And most of all, peace. What does any clown want but to make people happy? But I could not go on making others laugh when all I felt inside was pain, when the love I gave was not returned. But now my soul is free. I shall feel mortal pain no more. And so I can laugh forever.
You look and listen to the specter of a clown before you. And all that you know, Man-Thing, is that never has laughter made you feel so sad.
Hey, how fun was that, everybody? A suicidal clown, spousal abuse, death by car wreck. Yes, it's children's entertainment, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, this one, as we talked about in the previous segment, about how this, you know, the Dracula story of Dracula, Wolfman, and Frankenstein is probably Power Records at its creative peak. This is Power Records at its most perverse. In terms of, because I mean, all the Marvel, DC, and all the Marvel Power Records are adapted from comic books. They are adaptations of Marvel comics. So they had other Man-Thing stories to pick, but they chose to pick the one that opens with a clown attempting to commit suicide and succeeding. So
yeah, he didn't attempt. He succeeded.
But yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. So, I mean, I really am flummoxed as to why they did why. I mean, I think writing a book about Power Records would be worth it just to talk to whoever picked this story to say this is the one to do. I mean, it is just crazy. And, you know, I mean, I had it as a kid. I listened to it 1,000 times. I just don't think it sank in on me as to what I was listening to. You know what I mean? I probably didn't even understand really what suicide was, I guess. So it just, it just seemed like a creepy monster story. But for the love of Pete, a children's record ends with the ghost, the dead clown ghost, with this dialogue. You look and listen to the specter of a clown before you, and all you know, Man-Thing, is that never has laughter made you feel so sad. Enjoy going to school, kids. It's all worthless. No matter all your hopes and dreams, it's not going to amount to anything, because even a clown sometimes it's so sad that he has to kill himself. So, I mean, I don't know how much else to say about it, Chris. I love the heck out of this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, again, like you said, what went through their minds? I mean, you almost have to think somebody along the line said, I wonder if we can push this thing through. You know? It's like, can we really do this and make it happen? I mean, because it's kind of an odd story to adapt, you would think, because, you know, if you, especially just by going by the audio, you know, it's kind of weird because the whole thing with the light on the clown and where's it coming from, and it's there's got to be simpler Man-Thing stories, more straightforward, that they could have adapted.
Yep.
Even besides all the suicide and you know, slapping the woman and
yep,
you know, the heroine saying, step on it, lover, you know, which
yeah, yep.
That right there is like, you know, there's some more dialogue that they could have tweaked a little bit to make it a little less loaded, you know.
Yep.
It's somebody at Power Records must have thought, let's see if we can get this by everybody.
Well, I remember talking to Jerry Conway when I was writing an article for Back issue 36 about the actually, I think it's 37, which is the article I wrote about the Spider-Man Power Records specifically. And I was asking him about the Mark of the Man-Wolf adaptation. And I asked him, is there any background you can give me on this, how these things were created? And he said, basically, some guy who I guess was representing Peter Pan Records, went to Chip Goodman, the son of Martin Goodman, who was sort of the figurehead of – I mean, Chip was, not Martin. Chip
right.
Goodman was the figurehead at Marvel, the sort of kid that was put into power, you know, way above his station. And
yeah,
somebody came in and basically offered Chip, you know, like I think $10,000 for the permanent rights to these stories to adapt. And Chip was like, oh, okay. And he signed, took the money, and they never bothered, like Marvel never asked for any input on these things or asked to have approval. So you really do get the sense that, you know, they just were, Power Records were free to adapt whatever they wanted to adapt. And like you said, it was somebody deciding, let's see if we can push this a little. Because I would think if they sent this to Marvel, somebody at Marvel would have said, what? Wait a minute. No, don't do this one. You know? And it's kind of funny, too, because this was part of a sort of informal set. They did Tomb of Dracula. They did The Werewolf. And right. They did The Monster of Frankenstein. And then they did Man-Thing. Now, Marvel did other monsters. They did the Living Mummy. They did It, the Living Colossus. And they did all those adaptations. So it's like, it's interesting that they even did Man-Thing at all. Because he wasn't a universal, you know what I mean? Like, you've got Dracula, Frankenstein, and Wolfman, which are clearly, you know, Marvel versions of the universal monsters. And then you've got Man-Thing, which is a Marvel character. So he always seems like an odd fit, even within this odd group, that they chose to do Man-Thing. They didn't pick another monster character. So it's just an altogether weird thing, just all the way through. I met Steve Gerber a couple of times, and I never thought to ask him about this. You know, I never thought to say to, did you ever know that? Because I thought, how awesome, now I think about it in retrospect, because of course he's passed away. How awesome would it have been to have Steve Gerber autograph this Power Record?
Oh, yeah.
It would have been awesome. So yeah. I'm sort of frustrated. I never thought of that. And, you know, a couple of times I sat and had dinner with the man with other people. So I had an extended chance to do this. I'm very frustrated with myself. But, you know, I'm not so unhappy about that I'm going to shoot myself in a swamp. So, I mean, there's that.
Yeah, don't. And then, you know, just you'd be, you know, the dialogue that gets me in that the when the clown says, you'll kill me, make me die. You know, that's like, and the voice of the clown is just.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic, but it's just so freaking creepy.
Yeah.
Kids aren't creeped out enough by clowns.
Yeah.
forget Stephen King's It. This will do it for you right here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the music that's the warbly kind of strange music every time the clown's around is just it's just like carnival music through a meat grinder or something.
Through a meat grinder.
Yeah, it's just
good old fashioned Nightmare Fuel, kids.
The poor clown's body gets knocked around and beat around and carried through the swamp, and that's just
it was Nixon was president. It was a rough time. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, actually, I take it back. Nixon was not president in 1970. Well, actually, it depends on when this came out. This came out in 1974. So there was an actual chance that Nixon was not president, depending on when it came out. I don't have to say.
Right. Well, Gerber ran Howard the Duck for president later, so it kind of all worked out.
And there you go. Oh, wait, you know what? I'm looking up right here. This comic book came out in February 1974, so Nixon was, in fact, president then. Filtered through Steve Gerber's insane imagination. So anyway, those are the two Power Records we were going to talk about in this episode. They are two gangbusters audio adventures. I think they are really some of the most fun to be had in these Power Records, although there are some other really crazy ones that we're going to get to in the show, trust me. Hollow Man, anyone? Chris, I want to thank Chris for joining me on the Power Records, another Power Records show. These are always a lot of fun to do. They're so much more fun to do with somebody as opposed to me doing them by myself. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Geez, anything else you want to say about the Power Records before we sign off?
I just love them. I could listen to them all day, and I think the fact that we don't know that much about them kind of makes it. It's kind of this untapped. We know so much about comic history, and it's great that we do. And you know, there's so many great books and back issue and things and websites and stuff. But there's so little that we know about Power Records that each time you listen to it, it's kind of like this undiscovered gem. You know, it's like it's untapped. We haven't bled it dry yet. You know, like so many things that we're all into. You know, it's just great fun.
That's an interesting observation. I think you could be right. There is something about the sheer mystery of them that does probably add add a little something. If we could, maybe if we ended up interviewing all these people that made them all, it would lose a little of its luster. But I'm I'm willing to try and find that out. I'm willing to give that a shot. So anyway, Sid, if you enjoy this first episode and you want to hear more Power Records episode specific devoted episodes, please shoot us an email at firewaterpodcast@comcast.net. As always, you can find me on the Aquaman Shrine, which is aquamanshrine.net. We're on Facebook and Twitter. You can find Shag, who is absent this week, on Firestorm Fan, which is firestormfan.com, and on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Google+. Good Lord. So I said, I think that's going to be it for the premiere episode of the Power Records podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. And as I said, if you want to hear more, please let us know. Until then, fan the flame and ride the wave, and never has laughter made you feel so sad. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.
But wait, another flash of recollection from your former life. Funeral. Humans bury their dead. So this one must be laid to rest. And so you take the body deep into the marsh. While events take shape miles away that will transform this already somber evening into something more terrifying by far.